Kids Eat Toast Sometimes is a video podcast that explores the life and times of young creatives, mover shakers, and professionals. Real stories from real people. Occasionally funny and almost always seriously serious. This episode was recorded on Monday, the 20th of April. Hey everybody, welcome to the first or virgin episode of Kids Eat Toast Sometimes. I'm your host, Sam Holmes, and here's my slice of toast. Today we've gone for the Albany Brown, somewhat of a classic. As you can see, toasty, I'd say it's about at a 6, and the bite, I'd say that's a tad soggy. So I'm not kicking off on the best of feet there. Anyway, as enough of that, I'm here to welcome you and say a big thanks to my first guest as I try to digest this soggy Albany. Won't be making another appearance on the show, but who will be making his first appearance and hopefully many more is my dear friend Mazin Jeppy. He's with us today. He's joining us from down the road in his own lockdown. Mazin, pleasure to have you. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm good, thanks, Sam. All good my side.
How's lockdown treating you?
It's been up and down, trying to keep busy as I can. I mean, it's not too much you can do, but otherwise, so far, so good. I'm not sick yet, which is a positive.
You're not sick yet. I like that. It's very reminiscent of like all the zombie apocalypse movies you watch. Like, you're not infected yet, but you never know when it's coming. But before we get into all the corona and the life and times of the virus, I just wanted to give the guests a bit of perspective. So we've been friends close to 10 years now. I'd say we were 10, 11 years. We
met. Yeah, it's probably 2006 till now. So what's that, 14 years?
14 years. What a time.
Yeah, quite a while.
And over those years, I've known you as a complete variety of characters, really. In junior school, you were probably one of the earlier kids to be walking around as an intellectual. Your dad's a academic, so you were always quick to draw that card. And then you transitioned, I don't know, into this weird DJ phase, and apparently you're studying medicine now. So you've truly done it all.
The DJ phase started, I mean, funnily enough, the first time I played a set was at your house. I think it was you did a Movember fundraising party in 2016, sometime in 2016.
A Movember fundraising party, jeez.
Yeah, and I was just, I mean, I'd been into the music for a while, but it was the first time I ventured out and actually played a set. So yeah, thanks for letting me use your place, bro.
I like to hear that. That's your DJing career has some sort of semblance in Rowan Avenue. And no, the earliest memory I have of us is when we thought we were already like alternative in grade 6, and we'd listen to Green Day with Billy Joe, is that his name? Billy Joe and Mike Don't. And
like, Billy Armstrong, that's the guy.
That's the guy, and we'd like swear occasionally, and wasn't that titillating, but times have changed.
Yeah, well, I mean, we started playing guitar as a result of that phase. I still have my guitar, but I haven't played in years. It was a good time. I still listen to them from now and then.
Yeah, Green Day have got their place in time. And anyway, let's kind of speed up to the present day. And my main thing I want to know right now and chat to you about is how's Corona stepped into your life? What's it been like? I know you're doing work with the disaster management
team. Well, I've had quite an interesting experience with coronavirus because I was actually in China just before the outbreak was declared by their government. I went there for a holiday with my family, and obviously I was unaware of what was happening. I returned here in early January, thankfully, just before the pandemic took off properly. And since then, it's kind of been up and down. My university has been brought to a standstill for the third time since I've started medicine. So obviously, yeah, I feel like I'm almost used to having my year interrupted in some way. But apart from that, I haven't been able to work at the restaurant that I work at that also closed. the clubs that I play at, those are also all closed. So at the moment, it's just me at home trying to do the work that is, well, only today I found out we're going to be doing online learning. So I'm starting that next week, Monday. Yeah, and since then, it's kind of just been helping out where I can, volunteering at the Disaster Management Risk Center. And yeah, just trying to stay positive about the whole situation.
Yeah, no, that's great. I mean, you say your university has been disrupted three times. That would have been fees must fall, and now Corona. So I think there's a certain type of resilience that we as South Africans get, and we're very lucky to be at the top end of the spectrum in terms of we don't have too many financial worries, etc., etc. But I do think all these challenges and stuff ultimately are going to make us better people. That sounds a bit like yogi chat, but anyway. In terms of the disaster management, what's an average couple of hours there? What are your shifts, actually? I can't even begin to imagine what goes
on. Yeah, so the Disaster Risk Management Center, basically, it's based at Tygerberg Hospital, which is affiliated with Stellenbosch University. But we are currently going out as volunteers from the Surgical Society to help at the call center. So the Disaster Management Center itself, they deal with ambulances and are coordinating that. Our specific job as the volunteers is actually to answer the phones. So you have people phoning in for various reasons, ranging from requests for food parcels. But the bulk of the calls are actually dealing with people who have symptoms of the COVID-19 virus. So based on their symptoms and their exposures, we recommend that they either go get tested, stay at home, move into isolation, and give them general health advice depending on what symptoms they are suffering with. And that's usually for a 12-hour shift. So either from 7 a.m. till 7 p.m. Or 7 p.m. till 7 a.m. So there's a constant rotation. And it's not just UCT students. There are CPUT students as well as Stellenbosch students. And we make up about, say, 2/3 of the call center workers. And then the rest of the call center workers are community health workers who are employed by the Western Cape Department of Health.
Okay, cool. No, I mean, I love that when you mentioned it's not just the UCT students. I love UCT students. I was a UCT student, and they have this strange need to like or feel that they're the only university students that exist in Cape Town. But anyway, so the work you're doing there is fantastic. And I mean, that's what I've also loved to see about this corona crisis. I mean, of course, it's a national emergency, a global emergency or disaster. And the way people step up, you've got so many pages. I know like Supporter Safa is doing amazing stuff. You've got volunteers like yourself who are doing amazing work. And then you've got so many people, whether they're getting involved in Instagram challenge or making Samis, etc., etc. It's nice to see.
Yeah, I mean, I think especially for me, I should be exiting my medical degree at the end of next year. So I'm almost there. And some part of it felt almost wrong not to try and help at this point in time, especially seeing as COVID is a virus. As a prospective doctor, kind of makes sense for me to be out there trying to do what I can.
For sure.
And the call center is not the only way in which students have been helping out. There've also been students that have been helping with the research groups at UCT who are studying the epidemiology of the virus itself, as well as students working in the labor wards, giving hands there where they can. So yeah, it's quite a wide spectrum of stuff that people have been helping with, which has been nice to see.
It is always so sobering watching the news in the morning or the evening or whenever you do it. I know it's certainly become part of my daily routine. But one thing I did or thought about when I started this podcast is whilst coronavirus is inevitable in terms of a talking point, etc., etc., I didn't want it to be the main focus. I think it's important that podcasts like this happen, other forms of entertainment. Netflix is always doing the things, but it's crucial to take your mind off the matters, because it can be very overbearing and depressing. And I mean, I'm not afflicted by anxiety and anything like that, but there have been aspects where you're not sleeping well, or you're just going through a very weird mental process. So that leads me on to my next topic, and that is what you've been doing in lockdown, and just in terms of the day-to-day. And I thought Emily could actually pull up what one of South Africa's proudest is doing, or one we can be most proud of, Ryan Sands. She should be able to get that up on your screen. And are you familiar with Ryan Sands, Muzin? I'm sure you are.
Yes, I actually, I saw what he did about running the 100 miles in the yard and using his stairs. It's a very, very interesting challenge, 100 miles in your house. I mean, my dad's an avid runner, and he attempted 6 kilometers in our backyard, and that was a struggle in itself. I mean,
that was the sum total, yeah.
Yeah, but no, I'm glad people are doing stuff like that. That, I mean, because he's a runner by profession, so doing something like that is obviously within his nature. But 100 miles, that's super impressive, if it's in your house or not.
Yeah, no, I think it's 100 miles, like 160 k's, 150 k's. I'm not too sure. And it was over 27 hours of running, or something ridiculous like that. I mean, I've seen his Instagram. I've peeped his Instagram. He's got a fresh wife. He's got a young son. You would not catch me out here running for 27 hours, like 4,300 meters of elevation. But I suppose that's why he's got that Red Bull tag, and he's sponsored by Red Bull, because he's one of those boundary pushers. So I just thought, if anyone's like having a crap time in lockdown, thinking about productivity, just know that you haven't run 160 kilometers and you really are a piece of shit.
No, so I'm going to have to disagree with you there. Productivity, as a part of what your lockdown experience is, like, I don't think it's right. But for me, myself, now I'm obviously going to have university work to do. But prior to that, pretty much just been helping my parents with some household work, been writing some music, listening to some of my own music. I've also recently gotten quite into exercising, which is something I haven't been into for the past while. So I took up boxing in the past month, which has been really nice. I've been trying to limit my screen time, so I only watch movies or series after dinner, or in the period of time after dinner, so that I can attempt to read some stuff during the day. So yeah, I mean, it hasn't been too bad, but I'm now falling into a routine where every day is kind of a repeat of the previous day.
I think Apple should just join that Samsung trend and get screen time out of our lives, because I mean, the days are long enough, and then you have to confront that you've spent 6 to 8 hours on your phone, like either scrolling through a completely useless Instagram feed or flirting with the idea of downloading TikTok, which also makes me laugh, because the TikTok camp is also a very divided one. You've got people like, I'll never use TikTok. And I think UCT, just kidding, put up a great meme or tweet about it, where they're like, do people who avoid using TikTok think they have a PhD in maturity, which I thought was pretty accurate. Or you've got other people who spend 10 hours a day choreographing dance moves and like dragging their older parents and siblings into it. So the bottom line, or I think what I'm getting at, is just everything in this corona age is completely absurd, and you should just be doing whatever the hell you want or what makes you happy. And I think we'd agree on that. We're both pretty level-headed in that respect.
No, for sure. I mean, I haven't delved into TikTok at all myself, because I've used TikTok on someone else's phone and seen what it's about. And There's some funny stuff there, but I mean, you can find that on YouTube with the simple best of March TikTok compilation. But yeah, I'm definitely not part of the TikTok camp. I'll put that out there.
Yeah, Mazin, I've just been reminded by my team that 5 minutes have passed since you've last mentioned that you're either going to become a doctor or studying medicine. So I think I'll do the gentlemanly thing and return back to that topic. Because I'm always intrigued. Why do people start doing medicine? Because, I mean, I think most people hate hospitals, they hate getting sick, and you just kind of associate that. The only thing I can think of logically for becoming a doctor is the clout. Would you agree?
No, I wouldn't agree. I think maybe 1 in 100 do it for the clout, to be honest. There's varying factors as to why people choose it as a profession, because by choosing it, you almost have to live a specific life. You're supposed to be a role model of health, as they say. And I think the reasons range from people's parents wanting them to do it, to people wanting to prove something to their parents, to people carrying on a family legacy of having many doctors in their family, to people who find a calling in the need to help other people, or people are purely just fascinated by the human body. So I think it really ranges. And for me, it was a mix of many of those points I just mentioned, except the parental point. Neither of my parents are scientists, so they didn't really have any agenda for me to do science. But for me, it was really when I think I must have been about 17, I was toying with the idea of doing it. It was either that, engineering or architecture. And I went and I did a job shadow for 3 days in an orthopedic surgical ward. And I really enjoyed the way it works. There's a lot of human interaction. You get to work with your hands. There's a lot of science involved. And there's a lot of social work involved. So those four things together really sort of drew me to the career. And then, I mean, for the first 2 years, I didn't really enjoy it that much because it was just straight up science, chemistry, biology, physics. And then going into my third year, when you first start interacting with patients and doing clinical work from fourth year, is when it really grew onto me. And I feel like each year that goes by, I grow more fond of the medical profession.
No, that's great. No, of course, I wasn't being completely sincere when I said it was all about the clout, but it's wonderful to hear. It truly is a selfless profession. To be honest, when I think of doctors, the first thing that comes into my mind is that hilarious scene from Hangover, where they go and pick up, I think his name's Phil, they go and pick up Phil from his house, and Bradley Cooper is in the car, the convertible, just shouting, paging Dr. Faggot, paging Dr. Faggot. And I thought,
he's a dentist.
There we go. Well, maybe that's why they try to get him into the dig. Dentist, I'm not coming for you, just trying to stick with the Hangover theme. But it led me to a few points. I first thought, that was hilarious. And then I was like, do you remember The Hangover? I was like, what a funny movie. And then when I thought of actually saying the line, paging Dr. Faggot, I could barely get the F out, because it was such it's become such a disgusting and tarnished word, obviously for all the right reasons. But it leads me to the next point where I want to talk to you about, and just this complete change in society where we are more concerned with what we say, how we dress, this sharp increase in sensitivity that I think is a real trademark of our generation particularly, and the ones that will follow. And whether that's for better or for worse, I'd love to hear your thoughts on.
Yeah, I mean, you're definitely right in saying that society has become a bit hypersensitized to people saying certain things. And I mean, there's a place where that, I mean, especially with regards to certain topics, there weren't really sensitivities in those areas. And that, I mean, that comes down all the way to my field. What do you address a patient, their title, if they have had, you know, if they don't, how would I say it? If they don't hold themselves to a specific gender, or if they're gender fluid, it's a multitude of things, and it's pretty complex. But I do also think there are certain individuals out there like to gaslight and take a punch at anything, even if it's you know, the person's meaning something harmlessly. But yeah, I mean, I myself just try to stay away from arguing over matters like that, purely because I don't know enough about them.
Yeah, for sure. No, I mean, it's when I mentioned the word sensitive, I wasn't trying to perjurate the term or by any means. I think in certain instances, a heightened sensitivity is key, and it's what actually defines us and the younger generation coming through. But there definitely is this, I think you used the term hypersensitivity. That's going to sound wonderful on a broad on a podcast, but and I mean, I was scrolling through Twitter earlier, and Emily will pull this up, and it was just this tweet that or Instagram that Rachel Khaleesi had put up. And before I get into the story about Rachel Khaleesi, the Khaleesis need to be left alone. They are national treasures. Sia Khaleesi brought us back a Rugby World Cup, and for all I care, they can do whatever they want with their lives. They are national treasures. So I think Emily's got it up on screen now there. It's the one that she's posted with her kid, and she's basically just saying how she's straightened her hair. And there's one comment in there that says, like, her next step that Rachel's going to take is going to change the, like, pigmentation or the color of her skin. And when I read it, because it's, like, in line with this whitening of her child, and when I read it, I was just completely blown away by how trivial and ridiculous these sort of comments are, and how naturally they exist in social media. I mean, I'm sure you've...
I mean, this is also where the sensitivities come into play, especially with regards to social media, which is where most of these arguments are happening. I mean, this is quite... I mean, to me, that's quite benign. It's her child, and they are obviously in lockdown looking for things to do. Yeah, I mean, straightening your child's hair, that's something a lot of people do, regardless of your race. I mean, and yeah, I mean, I don't know. The people are always going to be out to get you, regardless of what you do, positive or I mean, obviously, if negative, then needed. But even if you're doing good work, there's always going to be someone out there to disagree with you. And that's even now with the lockdown and COVID. There's crazy conspiracies out there about where COVID really came from. There's a ton of stuff, and that's also just more gaslighting.
It is 5G. It's got to be.
5G. No, it's definitely 5G.
5G is killing us, man. I mean, do we even have the infrastructure for 5G? I know nothing of the subject. I will never descend down that Eddie Bravo rabbit hole. I refuse to do it.
I know how 5G works, but I don't know why people think it's making people sick. Basically, just uses higher frequency waves to give you faster network speed. But you have to have more network towers set up because the waves don't have a wide reach. So, but yeah, I mean, I think it'll be a while before 5G gets here.
I don't know. I mean, like, 5G just sounds cool. I remember when we had those Blackberries and you're like trying to connect to the internet, it was all about edge. Now, edge sounds dangerous. And edge was the only danger in edge was it was dangerously slow. My word, BBM just feels like a simpler times. That's what everyone says now as well. Oh, post a picture of themselves and Clifton Forth, tits out. Simpler times. Yes, Gabby, simpler times indeed. Okay, all the chat of Clifton Forth selfies and other discombobulating factors of the human anatomy this have distracted us. I haven't even asked you about your toast, which is undoubtedly cold by now.
Here's my toast.
What have you gone for?
The second last piece of low GI with butter, because tomorrow is shopping day. So.
Not too crunchy. It sounds almost worse than mine.
It was pretty cold.
Yeah, now for the first 10 minutes of this, I was trying to swallow my mouthful of toast, so enjoy that. On the topic of food and culture and all that sort of stuff, let's have a quick chat about Ramadan. Ramadan's coming up. Excited?
I mean, I'm definitely not as excited as in previous years, because, I mean, the cultural aspect of it is essentially going to be gone. Because for me, a big part of Ramadan was seeing family that I don't check that often, like reconnecting with the mosque community. There's always outreach programs that we do at the mosque, which, I mean, yeah. Wait, hold on. What's happening?
Everyone in the room had an absolute crack up. They started shouting at me for moving my shoes and making a noise. So now we'll get back. Yeah. Well, sorry, my humblest apologies, Mazin. So if you can just kick back off with Ramadan. Kind of just sounds like we're extremely culturally insensitive, and every time we hear Ramadan, we just start laughing. But my apologies, Mazin. Please continue. Hopefully this crew can keep it together.
Ramadan. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say I'm as excited as I usually am. It's usually a time of the year when, you know, families and friends reconnect. Especially at the mosque, you go around, you know, delivering cakes and exchanging food before you break a fast. Going to mosque in the evening, seeing friends, seeing family, you know, learning a bit. But obviously, that's all going to come to a standstill. It's essentially going to be fasting from home without the cultural aspect, which is huge, especially in Cape Town and the Western Cape. There are a lot of traditions that have sort of developed here that are unique compared to the rest of the world, that really make the fasting experience quite special for people living here. And I don't think that's going to be part of the experience this year, unfortunately. It's essentially just going to be fasting at home without anything else, unfortunately. And obviously at the end, that lockdown might affect Eid celebrations. So
when is Eid forecasted for?
Eid would be either 29 or 30 days after the start of Ramadan, which is on Thursday. This coming Thursday.
So, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just COVID has come for anything. It doesn't discriminate. Came for Easter. Trump was very upset about that, but what can you do? And now Ramadan and Eid. But again, I think with any process where we've had to find new ways to celebrate, new ways to interact, I mean, obviously breaking the fast over Zoom with relatives is just not the same, but it's the new normal, and I'm sure, like all communities have and will continue to adapt, and that's one of the wonderful things about the human spirit. So a slightly less serious question, as a follower of Islam, a Muslim individual, were you ever extremely jealous come Christmas time?
I don't think I've ever been jealous of Christmas. I think when I was 13 and people were having bar mitzvahs, I was like, oh, that would be cool for my 13th.
Yeah, but 50k.
I was like, I want a huge 13th bash and I want to get cash from everyone. But
cash.
I don't think I've ever been jealous of Christmas. I think I've maybe given two Christmas gifts out and like gotten one Christmas gift maybe. Like I've never gone to a Christmas celebration. And I think the main reason why I never was too bleak about Christmas is because I knew most of the people who celebrated Christmas weren't really religious at all. So for me, like Eid was like a religious celebration. So I saw Christmas as a religious celebration, also celebrated by people who weren't religious.
No, for sure.
I don't know. Like I've had that thought since I was like 10 or something.
No, I think part of the jealousy or the lack of jealousy rather is that it sounds like you've got your gift system all confused. You've given out two and received one. It's not really profiting come Christmas time. But anyway, moving forward, and I think what you've said is actually very accurate and quite beautiful in terms of. Of course, there are Christian families and many, many Christian families that do experience Christmas and this beautiful celebration of Christ, etc., etc. But I think for the most part, it's become this like bastardized version of capitalism on show. I mean, for the last Christmas, 2019, we were used to being showered with gifts, adorating each other. Oh, we're so marvelous. Here's a Xbox, etc., etc. And we decided, you know what? We'll do Secret Santa and everyone will get one present. I was like, wow, this is so noble of us. This is so cool. And it was going fantastically. We had a price cap. I bought my sister something really nice. And come Christmas morning, we all piled into the bed. We're feeling quite Christian-y, even though I don't identify whatsoever. And all we see is this plant in the foreground. You know, there's this weird looking plant. And my brother and I, we just look at each other and go, Jesus Christ. Oh. And I mean, I did, the blasphemy on Christmas was only deserving due to the quality of this plant and the condition it was in. And we just kind of looked at each other and we said, I hope this isn't for me. And sure as hell, when my dad proudly lifted up in his arms and started making his way towards me, I kind of wanted to push him away and say, no, we'll try again with something better than this damn ugly plant. But anyway, that's why I endorse the capitalist version of Christmas from now on. I won't be engaging in any Secret Santas. I want to know who they are, and I want to know what I'm getting. And you can call me greedy for that, Mazen, but I'll exist as a greedy person every single day of the week.
That's so funny because the only Christmas I've gotten was also a plant, and it was also a Secret Santa.
You see, it's a bunch of bullshit.
How did that work? I got a pot plant. From someone that I work with last year, and that was like my first Christmas present ever.
It was probably a fellow Muslim trying to keep you off the idea of Christmas.
No. I had to participate in it. It was fun though. I won't lie. It was fun.
Cheesy holidays aside, Mazen, you're 23 years old. You've got a jawline about as good as any. You've told us you're studying medicine, and we all know you're studying medicine, and we're very proud of you for that. You've seemingly got it all going for you. There is one question that I cannot really comprehend, and that is why you would choose to spend your weekends in the crack den that is Modular. I'll let you offer a rebuttal.
I don't spend my weekends there.
Already distancing yourself.
Sometimes go there when my friends are playing and stuff. But yeah, I think I've always been pretty drawn to music itself. I mean, we chatted earlier about our punk rock days, but you know, I dabbled in instruments. I played in a few bands through high school. And then I started getting into electronic music, same time you did. I mean, we used to share that music with each other. And yeah, eventually it evolved into something else. And now it's, I have, you know, a niche interest in the music and in a niche market in South Africa itself. I mean, the dance music scene here is up and has its ups and downs. But I really enjoy, there's a good community there of people doing some nice things, pushing the Cape Town music scene like on a global scale. And not purely not purely for profits, but on the other hand, there are also people who are in the industry for a quick buck. But yeah, I mean, from my side, I enjoy the music / community aspect that there is to offer in Cape Town, which is quite unique in itself.
Yeah, no, for sure. I like how you just skirted around the modular question there. Expertly done. I'm sure you'll be playing there in a couple of months. So, no, I'm only teasing. And your rise in the music scene has been quite meteoric because, I mean, everyone in Cape Town is either a DJ or a model or an influencer. And, I mean, you just can't get away from these people. But you're actually someone who's doing it, who's making a... would you say a living doing it, making your music?
Or no, it's not. It's not really a... I don't see it as a primary source of income. It's more of like a hobby passion that I pursue in on the side because, like, I'm of the idea that I'm a doctor first, and music's more of like a passion project to keep the soul going. Yeah.
Okay, for sure. Okay, so a side hustle, but I mean, still, I would never lump you into the category of someone masquerading as a DJ.
I think that's, if you're doing it for that, then you're doing it for the wrong reasons. And that kind of comes with the music people want to play as well. You'd find the egotistical ones going for the big crowds and stuff, because obviously that's more rewarding to the ego.
Hop past 3 a.m. and modular amongst the darkness and the billowing smoke, it's not so much about the people but more so the art.
Yeah, you can barely see the DJ in that place, so if you want your face to be known, that's the wrong place to be doing it.
Oh, modular. I think I could bash modular for a full hour, but we'll move away from this. I really liked what you said about how this niche content, this niche market that you feel is developing in the music scene that you're working in. And it's something that when I traveled and went to Berlin, I kind of felt a similar tie to that and aspects that reminded me of Cape Town. So I just like, what's your take on the culture at the moment that young people are starting to forge? Is it there? Are we copycats? Are we imitating? Or do we have our own distilled brand of music, dress, etc., etc.?
I think there's a very distinct community aspect of music in Cape Town, and it's like this wide network of connected people that like make the scene work. I mean, there's super small record stores that are like doing their best to bring us global music, hardly making profits. I mean, we've got like what, 2 dance music focus clubs where like there's a strict music policy. There's a lot of brands that are sort of bringing, like flying down internationals, like not to make a profit. And I mean, that speaks for itself. One of the brands that I'm involved with, we flew down our first international guest from Italy early on this year, and he was like completely blown away by the hospitality of this place. He like wants to come back. I mean, he still speaks to us on Facebook. As a result, we had a South African artist sign an EP on his label. Like, the guy was just in love with this place. And it's not just speaking for him. This is like the experience that many other people have had who visited Cape Town itself. It's really like a special place in that specific community. But I guess that also translates to the ethos of Capetonians or South Africans in general. It's like we're quite a hospitable bunch.
Yeah, I completely agree with you there. And I mean, it's fantastic. You've been involved in quite a few successful party and festival brands now, which is...
I lost money on that project big time, but it was not worth it. Yeah, I lost a big amount of money. I mean, it's a huge risk doing any type of event that's not like a huge festival or something. Those always turn cash.
Events are tough, events are tricky. But I mean, that's what I love about conversations and like discourse like this, you always assume that what you see on Instagram, you see the events well attended, it looked dope, etc., etc. You'd assume it's a success, and for you to be like very honest about it is great, because I think people spend so much time really glorifying the nitty-gritty. I mean, I've been delusional myself when it comes to clothing, branding, etc., etc. But when it's all said and done, to make your money in the entertainment industry, creative industry, it's super tough, it's super cutthroat, but I think as you'd agree, there's nothing more exciting than that whole process of starting off with nothing, or bringing an event from nothing, or a product from nothing, or an idea from nothing, and seeing it all the way into fruition, where you see real life people enjoying what you've brought to the table. So it's certainly very interesting.
Yeah, and that's always the craziest part, because I mean, for me, it's like I didn't make money there, but I'll always regard that as a success, like the experience of gaining perspective from someone, you know, 10,000 kilometers away. And I think that also, but now that also speaks to what's happening now, is that entertainment industry has essentially come to a standstill in terms of gaining cash flow. Like, I'm not using DJing or music production to earn my living from, but I mean, there are people who are super involved in this that are you know, paying their rent off it, and now it's not there anymore. So
yeah,
it's going to be a while before people are going to be able to get set fees and play again, and even then it's like the whole paradigm of the nightlife industry is just like completely going to be different.
I completely agree with that, and everyone I think has been using the lockdown, or not everyone, but a large amount of people have been using the lockdown as a countdown, and you know, like, oh, two more days and then I'm gonna be sending it on the Joel brother, and like, well, it's not gonna be there for some time. And you were chatting to me about an article earlier, or a Chinese article that you read, or article on China rather, about the reopening and the rephasing.
Yeah, so I mean, what they're doing in China is basically they've designed an app that has a QR code that's color-coded on your phone. So it tracks everywhere you go and tracks which other people with this app you've come in contact to. And if those people were positive for COVID-19, then your app turns red. And wherever you go, if you want to go into a restaurant or a club, they first have to see that your app isn't red. And if it's red, they won't let you in. If it's green, they'll still take your temperature and make sure you don't have a fever before letting you in. So it's a good way of sort of tracing, you know, disease, and also preventing it from entering into entertainment spaces. And as a result, they've been able to open restaurants, bars, clubs, and the sort in Shanghai and surrounding cities. Wuhan is still they're still phasing that in. I don't think it's going to open for another while. But that tactic of, you know, trying to screen everyone moving in and out of a place has certainly worked very well for them till now.
For sure. And I mean, it's so tricky when you look at China to try and model it as a template, because I mean, that surveillance state they live in, access to technology, that sort of stuff, we can't really rival them on. But what I have been shocked by, and before I get onto that, what I loved about that whole, the green light to get into the club or to the restaurant, is just, I just automatically thought about, you know, some like young bishy boy, you know, he's on the cusp of manhood, about to turn 18, you know, he's turning 18 that night, and he goes up to the bouncer, proudly thrusts his ID forward, and he has to show his phone, and it accompanies him with a red, and he's blocked. I mean, these are just heartbreaking stories that aren't going to see the light of day in mainstream media, so it's important that we cover them. But more so, what I took from that Chinese app, and whilst it's a fantastic way of doing things, it also speaks to more of the draconian measures that we have in South Africa. So whilst we might not have a surveillance state, the complete lockdown is crazy. The lack of exercise is crazy. The alcohol and cigarette bans, lots of people view as crazy. And when I say crazy, I'm not like, hey, this is it. It's got to stop, eh? Got to stop. Hey, come on, guys. I mean, I'm more in terms of, it's just, you know, we're a democratic country being told explicitly what we can and can't do, and it just wouldn't fly, I don't think, in any first world country. I mean, protests in America are already erupting over whether they are allowed to be locked down. Trump is tweeting like, liberate Michigan. It's a dog show. But I'd love to hear your thoughts and you weigh in on like some of these draconian measures that have been imposed, where they're successful, where they aren't, etc., etc.
Look, I'm 100% in favor of lockdown, of lockdowns in general. And this is for the reason that like our health system would not be able to bear the brunt of having thousands of new cases per week. Like there's just not enough ventilators, it's not enough ICU beds. And yeah, I mean, it could lead to like the cripple of the entire public health system here. On the other hand, you mentioned the US. So their health system is largely privatized, which has left a lot of people in debt, tricky situations. I think the average cost of being treated for COVID in America is close to $40,000 for the ICU, for like a 10-day ICU stay. So if you don't have medical aid, you essentially, you're screwed. And they didn't implement a lockdown. So as a result, you have a ton of people who can't afford that healthcare who are, you know, I can't say wrongfully exposed, because maybe they would be exposed anyways, but without that lockdown to sort of mitigate the spread, you have a lot of people who are either left dead or in tricky financial situations after recovering from the virus.
Yeah, I'm with you there completely. I think a lockdown was necessary, but how long it'll be able to be sustained in South Africa is also on the table of discussion, because whilst we try and take first world scenarios and implement them here in South Africa, the reality is me and you can survive a lockdown, and if we've been honest, are quite comfortable in the lockdown, but the ramifications on those in townships, the homeless, are being documented as you and I speak. But I suppose what I'm getting at is no one really knows. I just wanted to hear your thoughts, and more moving into, because it's been such a talking point, the ban on alcohol and cigarettes.
I think before we talk about that ban, it's just also important to realize that you'll never know how effective the lockdown would be if you aren't in lockdown. You'd only know how many cases you have without a lockdown. So, I mean, thus far we've done extremely well, even on a global scale, at controlling the spread of the virus. I'm all in favor of it. It's just also how long our economy can survive in a lockdown state. Because essentially all economies suffer during a pandemic, regardless of whether you have a lockdown or not. But the question is, how well do you recover from that pandemic after the lockdown?
Like any good white South African, I stand Cyril. So whatever he's kind of doing at the moment, he's got our full support. But I think that kind of wraps up what I wanted to say around that. I didn't so much want to pass judgment, because, I mean, who are we to tell nations whether they should lock down, whether they should impose bans, etc., etc. And you answered a few of those questions really nicely. But I think that's about it. Maz. Thanks very much for coming on. It's been a pleasure chatting to you. Haven't seen you in a while. It's crazy how Corona and lockdown is actually bringing a lot of people closer together. So no, I really appreciate your time. And yeah, I hope to chat to you soon. Thanks for coming on.
Cool. Thank you so much for having me.
That's it. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this, share it with your friends, your mother, your ex. Share it with your matches on Tinder. Hell, share it with your dog. Even if you hated it, share it with the people you hate. We'll be back next week. Thanks so much.